Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing of the show. We welcome you to Buckmaster for this Tuesday. It is November 22nd, 2022, the 59th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. The Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station KVOI 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show live line, when we do our telephone interviews, is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We welcome, though, now into the studio, Rafael Barcelo Durazo, who took office as the consul of Mexico here in Tucson on August 1st, 2020. Previously, he was the deputy director general of international human rights policy at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Mexico, in charge of several areas, including issues of migration and refuge. He also has served at the Embassy of Mexico in Brasilia, the capital of Brazil. He's also served at the Embassy in San Jose, Costa Rica. And it's a delight to welcome you, Consul General, to the program.
Bill, I'm very happy and glad to be here with you and have this opportunity to talk to your audience about what a Mexican consulate does, and particularly what a Mexican consulate does in Tucson.
There are 50, soon to be 52, consulates of Mexico in the United States. The consul here in Tucson, one of five. What is the primary responsibility of a consul here in Tucson?
In Tucson, I would say, like, what we call consular protection. That means giving information and sometimes representing Mexican nationals that have any kind of problem with authorities in the U.S. And Tucson being part of this funnel of the migratory route between Mexico and the U.S., I would say helping migrant families to let them know what's going on with their relatives in case they are detained, or in the very unfortunate case of people dying, because that's still happening in our region. So I would say that's the most delicate question, but also we issue the documents that Mexicans need, or people that do business with Mexico needs, like powers of attorney or Mexican passports, Mexican consular IDs. Also very important is what we call community outreach. And Tucson is fantastic. There is a very vibrant civil society organizations that actually work in providing services, health, financial advisory, education, and so many other empowering tools for the big chunk of the population in Tucson that is Mexican American or just Mexican. So it's something that we do a lot, these community outreach processes, and also, of course, promoting the interests of Mexico, that is culture, tourism, and international trade between Arizona and Mexico.
The migrant numbers, the arrests have been high, but are many of these people the same people? They're being counted numerous times. They're sent back across the border, then they try again and they're caught. And so you've got a lot of repeat offenders, if you will.
That is correct, Bill. And there's a lot of toxic narratives on migration. And unfortunately, on the media, you won't always find like the technical explanations about what's going on. So when you see, for instance, the number of apprehensions, it looks like there are so many people getting into the United States. Actually, that can be nuanced, because that number, it's been increasing. Of course, like, there is sometimes increasing and decreasing. It's something that it's affected by so many factors, migration. But particularly since COVID started, the application of one disposition called Title 42, that has meant that the expulsions are immediate immediate, at expirite. So some people are actually in those big numbers counted once, twice, thrice if they repeat their attempt because they are not processed into the United States with the regular migratory proceeding. So yes, it's a very technical issue. It is not easy, even for migratory lawyers. Sometimes it is so hard to understand and to be able to explain. And of course, for the regular public, talking about migration, it is always confusing because what you see in the media might be like the most sensationalist part of what is going on in migration.
Mr. Consul General, you teach currently at the Honors College at the University of Arizona. You're teaching a seminar. It's titled Otherness, How Migration and
Integration
shape and reconfigure identities. That sounds like a very interesting topic. What's the bottom line with that?
Well, the idea is like our societies are very complex. Mm-hmm. Migration and the integration of different parts of the population, it is a constant debate in every society. In the U.S., it is something that gets a lot of world attention. But
very emotional.
Exactly. It mm-hmm. gets very emotional. It is discussed normally from the guts, from the feelings. And powerful feelings are fear, for instance. But actually, integration of different parts of population has been going on since humankind started. So we are with a very diverse class that I have there, because in Honors College you may have people from science or health or business people that are trying to understand what's going on in the societies around the world, but particularly in their own society in the U.S. And actually, identities, it is a force of societies. But sometimes it can be used from the political side of the business, I'm quoting here, business, as a way to exploit feelings against one identity to the other. And I think it is very interesting when you get to understand the social phenomenons that go on when different identities collide and actually share and they integrate in different models, how enriching this can be. So it's been a fantastic conversation with my students about what has been going on in Latin America, in the U.S., in Canada, in Australia, in Japan, in Europe. They all have different models of and migration also, but also the integration of different populations. Because let's talk about Spain, for instance. It's not that their integration problems are not related to migration particularly. It's because they also have different identities. People from Catalonia have a different identity. People from Galicia. And that is also something that goes on in our societies, like the indigenous populations and different waves of migrants that that came from Europe or the Middle East or now from Latin America or from other countries. And how this is shaping and reshaping us also. The creation of the us and the creation of the other. Because it is a creation, it is a social construct.
So the historical roots of this area go back, of course. This used to be part of Mexico until the Gadsden Purchase. Has that made more of a welcoming feel, do you think, for Mexicans in Arizona, at least in this part of Arizona?
I will say yes, Bill, and I will also say that it has been welcoming for other people, because this like Mexican flair that Southern Arizona and Tucson particularly has, it is also very attractive for people from different origins. So I would say yes, it is a city that embraces diversity. When you say the old Pueblo, you're already talking about that past. And I think it's also an advantage that Tucson has. Even when you compare it with other cities in Arizona, it's like it's a different vibe. And I am from Sonora State, so when the diplomatic career gave me the opportunity to come to Tucson, I felt it like coming back home, and people in Tucson made me feel home immediately.
We've been speaking with Rafael Barcelo de Rosso, who is the consul general of the consulate in Tucson and representing the country of Mexico, and we thank you very much, Consul General, for being with us.
I am the one who thanks and wish you a very happy Thanksgiving for everyone.
Well, let's talk about Thanksgiving now, because one of our sponsors, Mr. Consul General, is Mona's Danish Bakery up at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Will you be I'm sure you're thankful on just about every day, but Thursday, will you be sitting down with your family for Thanksgiving dinner?
I will be sitting down with friends. My family came to visit me in this weekend, and we had the opportunity to thank together. And I'm very thankful. I'm very thankful for the community I belong to. And I'm also very thankful for the health and the happiness that we can all build upon ourselves.
What about desserts? Traditionally, a pumpkin pie. Do you like the pumpkin pie?
I love pumpkin pie, but pecan pie is my favorite.
Ooh, okay. Well, the team up at Mona's Danish Bakery can certainly take care of that request for you. And time is running out. Folks do need to put in their request for their pies and their dinner rolls. It's monasdanishbakery.com. Or better yet, go into the bakery. Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise are open right now for lunch. Put in your order now, because we are a couple of days now away from Thanksgiving 2022. All right, we'll take a break right here on the Buckmaster Show, and we'll be back with our financial contributor Shelley Fishman right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Mr. Shelley Fishman. Shelley, how are you on this a shortened work week?
I am just great, Bill. Looking forward to a couple of days, off and not having to worry about the stock market. And today it's taking care of itself, too. So
market is fine. Up a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah, about 300 points. We're over 34,000. When you consider that in October, the market at its low point, when everybody said, it's a bear market, mm-hmm. it had gone down below 29,000. I'm talking about the Dow, of course. So we're up 5,000 points.
Wow.
From the low.
That's...
We've long since left anything that resembles a bear market. And now, hopefully, if I'm right, we'll wind up the year maybe a couple of thousand points higher, which will be a 2 or 3% gain for the year, on top of last year's big gain. So, not bad.
Retailers point to what is commonly called Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. It's interesting, Shell, to note that most of the big retailers, Macy's and on, are going to be closed on Thanksgiving, and traditionally they were open, and I always felt sorry for the employees who had to work that day, but they will be closed. So then Black Friday kind of kicks off the Christmas holiday season. What's the origin of Black Friday?
Glad you asked, because I just happened to do some research on that, because I was wondering myself if my assumptions about it were right. So there's some pre-Civil War stuff that I don't want to talk about. It's as bad as it gets.
Yeah.
But there was, in the late 50s in Philadelphia, the police department named the Friday after Thanksgiving Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being, the Army-Navy football game mm-hmm. was the very next day. It was Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And so people flooded into Philadelphia, and the town had literally hundreds of thousands of people that didn't belong there, and they were uncontrollable because they got there and started drinking. And so the police department in Philadelphia considered the Friday after Thanksgiving to be Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
That said, the retail business in general can be a profitable business. In some cases, you do it well. In some cases, you don't. But a profitable business overall, I think most people would consider a 20% year or a 15% net profitable year to be a pretty good return on investment. Well, if you take a look at how long into the year mm-hmm. it takes you to get 85% into the year so that the balance of the year, that 15%, is all profit. And, of course, mm-hmm. that's not the way you measure it. Mm-hmm. But, just for purposes of discussion, that takes you about the middle of November. And so the day after, and this started pretty much in the mid-70s, The day after Thanksgiving became Black Friday, because when retailers went from the red non-profitability into the black, which was profitability,
okay.
Because the way accountants used to measure things, red was losses mm-hmm, and black mm-hmm. was profit. So that's the origins of Black Friday. It is, strictly speaking, can't say that's the day you get profitable, but that's about the time of the year when, if you're not making profits, you're not having a good year.
Well, let's hope our retailers have a very good Black Friday, because they've had a few bad years, certainly with pandemic, and more people doing online. Well, but I guess they, online, are considered retailers,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. Retailers are very much people in the retail business. Mm-hmm. And
model now has gone more of the retailers going to online.
Well, and the pandemic has really pushed businesses to expand and grow their e-trade. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they were hiring people to handle the loads. Now that the pandemic is, for the most part, past us, those companies find themselves with too many employees. And so guess what they're doing? Mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing layoffs at Amazon. We're seeing layoffs at Facebook. We're seeing layoffs at other companies that really did staff up during 20 and 21 and now find that they've overstaffed. I'm not making excuses for some of the craziness that's going on in the media, but that's behind a lot of why the high-tech world is needing to downsize a bit. It's not necessarily because they're not doing their job well. It's just that, you know, like any business, when it gets very busy, you staff up, and then when it slows down, you staff down a little bit. It's a horrible thing if you're part of the staff down piece.
Shelley, I want to talk a little bit about, we began this last Tuesday, some of the year-end thinking that investors should be going over. Let's hit on a couple of them today.
Okay, well, you know, the end of the year is always a good time. It's arbitrary, but it's a good time to take stock of where you've been in your year. When you've got a year like we've had, Bill, which has been so very volatile, then it's almost a tautology. It's almost a given that your portfolio is not balanced properly as it was at the beginning of the year. So I don't, you know, really care what the proper balance for you is. For each individual, that's going to be a little different. But whatever it is, when stocks have gone down 20% and then up 15% and then down 10 and up 15, the likelihood is that when you take a look at that pie chart that defines your portfolio, it's no longer looking like what you thought it should look like at the beginning of the year. So this is a great time to sit down with your advisor and really go over what you need to do to get it rebalanced. Now, that raises a couple of issues. And the other issue that gets raised, and it's very important, is just because you want to rebalance, if you're doing it in a retirement account, there are no tax implications. Have at it. Rebalance all you like. Get it right. Make sure it's still appropriate going forward for you, and there are no tax consequences. However, if you're not talking about a retirement account, 401k, an IRA, there may be tax consequences, which means that if you've got some gains, because some stocks have done very well this year or did well in prior years, and you were holding them, now you've got these gains so that if you sell that stock, you want to get a little liquid, for instance, or you've, you know, it's gone up enough for you and you want to maybe back out, you have to face the possibility of capital gains for that sale. Now, in a year when there have been some good losses, and I call them good losses, but you know, reasonable losses that probably also parked and made a home in your portfolio, you can offset the gains from one stock with the losses from another. So this is a time to what's called harvest capital losses.
Hmm. Let some of those go then.
Let some of the gains go and let some of the losses go, and they offset each other.
Mm-hmm.
So the pain of having lost money in you know, several investments is offset somewhat by the fact that you are taking gains that you felt stuck with.
Mm-hmm.
And needed to hold on to, or were holding on to, not because you wanted to, but because you felt you didn't want to pay the capital gains tax. So again, sit down with your advisor. Don't do this on your own. This is not a do-it-yourself project. And, you know, they can model this for you, and it has to be done by the end of the year. You can't do it by tax day in April. It's got to be done within the calendar year.
People have a traditional mix, many investors, I shouldn't just say people, but many investors, of a mix that is weighted more with equities, and then they have a portion in bonds. Has that formula generally held up this year?
It has generally held up. Bonds have not done as badly mm-hmm. as stocks when the stocks were down, you know, 22-23%. But they also haven't done as well, you know, in recovery. Bonds tend to be less volatile mm-hmm. than stocks. The capital gains implications, by the way, are the same.
Yeah, they are.
If you're an investor in your 40s or 50s and your portfolio is in the area of 70% equities and maybe 20% bonds and 10% cash, way to check whether that balance is still there is really by sitting down with your advisor. If you're like me, if you're kind of semi-retired and the last thing you want is more risk in your portfolio, mm-hmm. then you probably have more bonds and fewer aggressive equities. And in that case, then your volatility during the year has been less, but there's still been some. Mm-hmm. And so, again, this is a great time to sit down, take a look at it, see if it's still what you want. Because we're in a recovery now, it might also be a time to maybe get a little more aggressive as we go into the next year. So maybe 70-30 isn't the right mix. Maybe 80-20, or if you're retired, 60-40 is a better mix. So again, that's something to really explore with a professional.
Shelley, have a happy Thanksgiving, okay?
You too, Bill, and a very healthy one.
Thank you very much. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? Well, not all news is good news. You know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Tuesday before Thanksgiving 2022. Still time to get over to Green Things at 3384 East River Road and pick up a poinsettia or two or three. They've got such great colors over there, and they've got thousands. They grew 20,000, but they won't be, I don't know, they'll be probably going pretty fast, I imagine. I don't know how many thousands they have left. But they certainly have enough to beautify holiday eyes. I just made up a new word there, John. Holiday eyes your home, getting it ready for Thanksgiving dinner. The 13-acre site, also home to Zocalo and all that wonderful merchandise. Some really neat holiday things, too, at Zocalo. Beautiful imported things from Mexico. When we do our telephone interviews, which we are going to do right now, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line. Pima County Supervisor Adelita Grijalva, Democrat representing District 5, and the long term, actually 20 years, as a member of the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. She is currently the president of the governing board, but will be saying goodbye here. I think there are two meetings left that Adelita will be a part of, and then she is retiring from the board. Adelita, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Bill?
Doing real well. And let's kind of this first segment with you, let's sort of unpack a lot on your last, you've got, I think that's right, isn't it, two meetings left on
it
the board?
Is.
So,
two
I
meetings.
Mean, there's so much I want to talk to you about your 20 years. You were president, I think, twice, right, during that period?
Three times.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, well, why don't we get right into it. What was kind of the high point of that 20-year period?
You know, I had the opportunity to get interviewed a little bit ago, and really, there's so many positive things that have happened as a result of me being on the board, and the biggest ones happen at the end of every year with graduations and promotions. It's a culmination of all of the work that all of our schools do, and you get to just have a tiny, you know, view into all of that work with students walking across the stage and me getting to shake hands and giving diplomas. Those are the biggest takeaways and the things that I'll miss by not being on the board.
Then you've got the TUSD being under the court order. The DSEG order that goes back to the 70s, that's really now going to be going away. That's a huge deal, isn't it?
It is a huge deal, but there's so much of that work that the district should be continuing to do. And so I do think that it's important for us to make sure that there continues to be a process by which we inform the community as to what we're doing with that funding. And make sure that our schools that are receiving that funding, our magnet programs, know that that funding is going to continue. But being able to be on a board that is going to be able to have the ultimate say as to what happens in our district is not an experience that I've had. So the board after me will have that opportunity.
When we think about perhaps low points of that 20-year period, the contentious issue around an issue that the superintendent at the time, Mr. Tom Horn, who now will be superintendent again, going after what were termed ethnic studies. Some of your thoughts about that period, and this could be a difficult time ahead here with Mr. Horn. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think that the circumstances are very different in that we're going to have a governor who supports public education. And so some of the authority that, Superintendent of Schools Horn had that at the time may not be the same circumstance in this case. That was a really divisive time, and sadly, I've seen it become more divisive. You know, this last 3 years has been really difficult, and so I think that our schools are in really good stead. I think that they're doing a really good job. Many of our schools increased one letter grade, two. One of our schools increased three letter grades, and so we're doing the work. Now we just need the state to fund our public education system adequately so we can continue to do that.
When we had Superintendent Trujillo on last week and we were talking a little bit about Mr. Horn, he was welcoming Mr. Horn to take a look at a TUSD that really is very different from the TUSD that Mr. Horn perhaps remembers, Adelita Grijalva, from 2008 to 2010.
Right, and I think that that's true. You know, I think the circumstances are different. I think that we've gone through a process to get culturally relevant courses approved. There is a curriculum established. You know, a lot of the rhetoric will hopefully go away. But since, you know, Horn has done everything he can to have campaigns that are divisive, including this one, you know, he's going to have some campaign promises to keep, which will in all likelihood really hurt our students.
He said stop critical, what was the thing?
Critical race theory.
Critical race theory. That was what Mr. Horn campaigned on. And go ahead.
Yeah, which we don't do in our K-12 system. And that, to me, it's that kind of ignorance of the curriculum and what our schools are teaching, which is the most scary, in my opinion, because you clearly don't understand what our role is in K-12, and that culturally relevant critical race theory is something taught at the university level, which I think is an appropriate place for it. But, you know, all of our curriculum has been approved. It was part of a court order. And so what I worry about is now that we're out from under that order, that we'll have, you know, some movement at the state level to try to eliminate culturally relevant courses, which are completely different and have a lot of merit. And my daughter and sons both have participated in culturally relevant courses that I think have been really beneficial.
And the culturally relevant courses, and correct me if I'm wrong, are electives. These are not mandatory courses, correct?
They're not mandatory courses, but they do fill core course requirements. Mm-hmm. And so my daughter is taking culturally relevant English. That is something that will fill that the requirement for 4 years of English. This is her second year, so she's taking two. But yes, it is an option that I think is very popular with students.
So before you say goodbye with these next two meetings, there are some really important financial issues that need to be addressed. And you can point out, all of us need to point out that this is something that is left right now in the hands of the legislature. And this is something that Dr. Trujillo explained, that there is a deadline coming up in a couple of months about a renewal of some money that, if it's not renewed, it would be a devastating blow to districts like TUSD.
Right. So they have to deal with the expenditure cap. And that's something that should hopefully happen very quickly. I do think that this is the first time in a number of years, several decades, decade and a half, where we've had a governor that supports public education. And so I do think that some of those initiatives are going to be pushed by the governor's office, which is going to be really beneficial to schools. The problem now lies in whether we have enough people in the House and Senate that are going to be willing to work with the governor's office? Or is this going to be, you know, 4 years of constant battling?
The salary issue has been huge for Tucson Unified, and there was quite a bump. That was an important meeting. Wasn't that at the last meeting?
I was so glad to be able to be a part of that vote. Yes, we actually bumped our bus drivers up significantly. Every one of our employees is getting an increase. And the great thing is that they'll start to see the impacts right away. One of the arguments when we move to $15 an hour is that we cause compression. And so you have people that just started working, are very close in salary with someone who started 5 years ago. And so how do we adjust that? And so we were able to do that. And it was a significant investment in our employees, and I was really glad to be able to be a part of that.
When you have two new members coming in, it's always kind of a learning curve for them and kind of feeling out the chemistry. How do you think this board is going to work, this new five-member makeup?
Well, I don't know much about one of the board members, but I do am very familiar with Jennifer Ekstrom, and I do think that the Ms. Shaw, Ms. Luna Rose, and Dr. Ravi will be able to work really well with Ms. Ekstrom. I'm not sure about Mr. Romero. Some of the debate or sort of forum that I heard, I don't agree with a lot of the positions that he has. And one of them is that, you know, we're going to treat the district as a business. It's not a business. It's an education. Mm-hmm. It's an educational institution. And so I'm hoping that some of those adjustments will occur as a result of actually sitting on the dais, getting the information and doing the work. Because if your goal is really supporting students, that's why these positions are nonpartisan. Partisanship shouldn't have any role in it.
And Ms. Ekstrom certainly is qualified, isn't she?
Absolutely. And she has a lot of experience, not just personal in South Tucson, but she has experience here as a county employee, which as a county employee for the last almost 2 years of my term, it's been incredibly beneficial to understand what's happening with the health department, what are the kinds of economic development programs that are happening here, and to be able to share those. And it really highlighted the need for continued collaboration between our K-12 systems and Pima County. And that will hopefully continue and improve.
It's going to free you up a little more time. Certainly. You've got, I don't know how much it will free you up, but that's one responsibility that you will have in the rearview mirror at TUSD, but right. I'm certain that you have valued your 20 years there.
I'm really going to miss it. I'm actually getting very sentimental about it as the meetings are ticking away. Having Tuesday evenings free will be different. But I am thinking about, you know, the 15 to 20 hours that I dedicate to being on the school board and thinking about going to get my master's. Mm. So I'll just fill it with some other things.
All right. Well, let's talk about your other job after we take the break as Pima County Supervisor. Stick with us. Adelita Grijalva will be right back on The Buckmaster Show.
Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years.
contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is John Trout. Start your day well-informed and join me for America in the Morning, weekday mornings at 5 before Wake Up Tucson on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you on this Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, one of our great sponsors, want to wish all of the Southern Arizona listeners of the Buckmaster Show a very happy Thanksgiving and ask that you consider perhaps a 3-hour drive over to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. A lot of people have a 4-day weekend coming up. Might be a great time to sample Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. SouthwestNewMexico.org, that's the website. Check it out. Lots of activities, including the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument, some great places to stay, and great places to eat as well in Silver City, which has some beautiful Victorian architecture as well. Neat place. District 5, Pima County Supervisor Adelita Grijalva on the live line with us. The live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. A very important meeting yesterday, Adelita Grijalva. This, you and your colleagues appointed a new constable and ordered body-worn cameras for personnel in the office that really has been has several vacancies, a lot of high tensions following that fatal shooting of one of the constables, and this is an area that really needs kind of an overhaul, doesn't it?
It really does, and that's one of the reasons why we approved the request by the interim, I believe he is, constable, for tasers and all of the equipment that's necessary, because I do think that those cameras are going to increase transparency. There were a couple other items that did not pass, including the addition of deputy constables, because I do think once there's a full contingent of constables in office, then they may not have the need for the extra assistance.
So right now, the constable's office has 5 vacancies in the county's most populated justice precincts, serving papers from the Pima County Consolidated Justice Court, leaving the work of 8 precincts in the hands of 3 constables. So how are papers being served? There must be quite a backlog.
Well, I don't believe that there's a huge backlog. I do, from what I understand, is that some of the constables' workloads have been on a steady decline for the last 5 years. And so some constables deliver like 20 to 25 sets of papers per month. And so it just depends on the frequency. And I think that once we have, again, the full complement of constables, I think it's going to be a lot easier for us for them to manage that. I also think it's important that we really address some of the inequities as it comes to the distribution of those papers and for those districts. And again, this is not in my wheelhouse of things that I have the authority, we have the authority to adjust. But I do think it would be important for them to look at perhaps process servers to fill the gaps for some of those districts that are really have much more workload than others. But my understanding is there really isn't the need at this point for the deputy constables.
There's been an issue, too, about the amount of money that they make. I think Jan Lesher, the administrator, is kind of looking at revising the constable's salaries. In fact, the lowest allowed by state law, if they don't agree to this new kind of cohesive set of principles.
Right. I think it's 47, a little over 47,000.
48,
right,
yeah.
Right. What they're making now is 67,000.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so what we're asking for is for that, you know, for them to adhere to some basic principles and for sharing of the workload. Because sometimes my understanding is that this job is not currently a full-time position. And so, you know, we at this point, some of the constables don't have enough work for the full day. And so that was a concern about adding two additional deputies.
Your district is the most urban of the five Pima County supervisorial districts. So certainly the issue with renters and escalating rents, and sometimes people can't afford the rent, and then that turns into homelessness. It's a huge issue that will have to be dealt with, hopefully dealt with in 2023.
I hope so. I mean, we're still about 48,000 homes shy of what we need or what the demand is. And we have a lot of property owners that have sold over COVID. And then, you know, the new property owners are increasing the rents pretty significantly. We don't have any check and balance to be able to regulate that. Right now, we can't enforce, you know, rent control unless it's county-owned property or city-owned property. And so I think that that's some of the things that we're going to have to look towards, because we do have many people on fixed incomes that are now not able to live where they've been living.
The whole homelessness issue is not just a Pima County problem. Every major city in the country is dealing with it, and there's no cookie cutter solution, Adelita right. Grijalva, to this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. And I don't think that it's one, you know, silver bullet that's going to fix everything. Homelessness is not a crime, but trespassing and vandalism and assaults are. And so what my concern has been in the last meeting, the meeting before that, and also in our upcoming meeting on the 6th here at the Board of Supervisors is, the increasing sort of demand for us to take action as a board when this is not something that is a problem that is exclusively in Pima County. It's something that is a regional problem, and we do need to work collaboratively with the city and other municipalities in order to come up with an answer that's going to work, and that then it's not going to be the same answer for every situation. I think that that's important.
You might actually have to take a regional approach, something
yeah.
like, you know, the what we've done to with transportation. Maybe we need a regional board or to examine how to everybody get on board to solve the issue, all of the jurisdictions.
Exactly right. And that's what we asked our County Administrator Lesher, you know, 3 weeks ago, and then a month ago about, and then our last board meeting, we had an item on the agenda from one of my colleagues, you know, asking us to take action and take direction in from one group of community members that are coming forward that are from the business community. And I'm not trying to disregard or negate their concern. Their concerns are legitimate. But the solution is not just going to be, you know, setting up a tent city somewhere in our district. And most of the suggestions have landed in District 5. They also landed in the city of Tucson. And the mayor and council have clearly said this is not something that they're interested in moving forward with and having a low barrier tent city. So we have to come up with better solutions for sure.
We all need to sit down at the table on this one. Anyway, we'll be speaking of sitting down at the table. Adelita, all the best to you and your family this Thanksgiving. Hope it's a blessed one.
Thank you so much. To you too, Bill. I really appreciate it. And we'll talk soon. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much, Supervisor Adelita Grijalva, and soon to be the past president of the TUSD Governing Board and past member of the board after 20 years of service. Back with you tomorrow. Have a great afternoon, everybody.